Today on Minnesota Stories, I speak with Frank Spaeth. He's currently the part owner and general manager of Med City FC, which is a soccer team based in Rochester, Minnesota. But his path took a lot of turns. It was fantastic to sit down with him, learn about how you can go from working for a women's professional volleyball team to a natural history museum to a minor sports organization, and now a pretty big operation in Med City FC. I really enjoyed this talk, and I think you will too. Stay tuned for Frank Spaeth's Minnesota Story. Okay. Frank, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Tyler.
We kind of discussed how this would go to begin with, and already the questions are running around in my mind. But first off, let's just start off with where you were born and raised and kind of what your background is before we get into what you're doing now.
Sure. I grew up out west, mostly Colorado, Utah a little bit, and I was always active in sports. Even high school, I played four different sports. I came to Minnesota for college, played a couple different sports in college. So athletics has always been a big part of my life. And so, that kind of led me into some different times during my professional career that involved sports. I was the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Chill, which people who've been around Minnesota for a while here in Rochester will know that that was a professional volleyball team that was here for about a year and a half. That was a really awesome experience. There were some great volleyball players, several of them that went on to play for the national team and a few that actually played in some of the Olympics. There was that.
We have to just back up a little bit here. You're already getting into amazing experiences. So grew up kind of out west, Colorado, Denver. What did your parents do? Did you move around a lot?
We did. My dad worked for a company similar to an IBM. It was called Olivetti. So he was a branch manager there for that company. Basically, he was the fix-it guy. So what would happen is they would send him to a branch that was having trouble. He would take about a year and a half to 2 years to get them straightened out and running properly, and then they would transfer him to the next place. So I actually got a chance to move around a lot early in my life. I grew up, like I say, Colorado and Utah, but I lived in Oklahoma, I lived in Kansas, all of that by the time I was 10.
So I expect that sports, not only is it something that you enjoy doing, but that's got to be the easiest way to get to meet new people when you go to a new place. Was that part of your experience?
Yeah, definitely. I think, if I really think about it, I do think so. And I think, growing up, the athletic kids could fit in a lot more easily maybe than a kid that wasn't. And so I guess I used that to my advantage, so to speak, as you're going to new places and you're interacting with new kids, and every couple of years you're leaving your old friends and you have to make new friends. And I think the fastest way to do that is to find common bonds, common ground, things that you both enjoy. So I guess thinking about it, I think I did use that as a kid as a way to kind of insert myself into social situations at early in my life.
Yeah. And the system's kind of set up for it too.
Yeah.
For sure. Organizations and all that kind of stuff. You said you played four sports. What four sports did you play in high school?
So in high school, it's funny, I didn't play soccer in high school. I played soccer from the time I was probably five all the way up until I got to high school. And then in high school, I decided that I wanted to give football a try. So I ended up playing football for 4 years in high school. I played basketball. I played baseball for a year, and then I ran track for a couple of years. So four different sports. Actually came up to Minnesota, went to Concordia University in St. Paul. And while I was there, I initially came up for football. I played football my freshman year there. Didn't like it. Mostly, I think it was the fact that at the time I weighed about 160 pounds. And, you know, to be a college football player at any level at 160 pounds is tough. And, you know, I just kind of decided that, you know, that game was, you know, they were a little bigger, the other guys, than I wanted to play against. I remember, you know, being on defense, I played cornerback, and we played, you know, our offense played the option. And so as the cornerback on the option, your responsibility is the running back. So the running back gets a pitch, and that's the player you're supposed to tackle.
The 220-pound guy.
Exactly. Our running back my freshman year was a senior, and his nickname was Jughead, and he weighed 235 pounds. So there's me over and over and over again tackling a guy that weighed 75 pounds more than I did. And so I just decided, you know, maybe that wasn't the sport for me. I met some of the guys that played soccer that same year, my freshman year in college. They were playing indoor soccer. They asked me to come play. I think the first game I came out, I scored 4 or 5 goals, and they said, why aren't you playing soccer on the college team? So I got to know them a lot better and ended up changing sports. And I played the rest of my college career, played soccer.
That's unheard of now with the specialization of people in sports.
Yeah.
They have to play the indoor season, spring, then they're playing soccer all, but you know, you did kind of cross training, and it's not even really cross training because you were doing none of the actual soccer training before.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you're right. I think it's kind of sad that we're forcing kids to specialize in sports at such an early age, because I think, you know, I think there's something to be said for overall athletic development. And I think, you know, I've always found that, I mean, a good athlete can be valuable in any sport they play, you know, and I think that sometimes you can enhance some of your physical and athletic abilities that you're in one sport that you're not using in another sport. And that can be a benefit to all the sports that you play. So I agree. I think that specialization is hurting kids these days.
So you were at Concordia, started in football, switched over to soccer. What were you taking in school at the time? Was it a sports management, something along those lines?
No, I was taking a communications major. Okay. Actually, I'm a theater minor. I was involved in several plays and musicals in college. And I also was in the pre-seminary program up at Concordia. So considering going into the ministry, becoming a pastor. And along the way, I decided that wasn't the path that I wanted to go on. And so I graduated with my major and my minor and went on my way.
My wife was a communications major, and I always say that she wanted to be a weather reporter, which is not the case. She doesn't like that, but that's – so did you want to be a weather reporter? That wasn't the plan?
I didn't. No, I always gravitated more towards writing. So okay. So out of college, I – worked for a magazine up in the Twin Cities called Fate Magazine, which it was a magazine of the paranormal and supernatural. So there I am, pre-seminary, pre-Lutheran pastor degree, and then my first job is the paranormal and the supernatural, ghosts and UFOs and psychic phenomena and all these things that I wouldn't say never really had an interest in, but I never really gave any thought to. And so,
was it just the job was available, or
I got an internship with them. Our internship office at Concordia called me and said, "Hey, there's this opportunity that we think maybe you'd be interested in." I'm not sure why they thought I'd be interested in it, but I'm like, "Okay, I'll go check it out." Right, so I did, and they hired me on as an intern, and I ended up working there after my internship. Got a couple promotions and ended up as, you know, associate editor and publicist for the magazine, but 4.5, 5 years later. And then at one point I decided, you know, maybe this isn't the thing I want to do for the next 40 years of my life. And so I moved on from there.
Well, the leaps that we're taking here, I feel like we can go down so many different directions, but we're going to get towards ownership and management of a soccer team in Rochester, Minnesota. But where you say that you realized after 4 or 5 years that writing and editing this for this magazine was not the path that you wanted forever. There are a lot of people working that don't, you know, that maybe feel that, but they just say, no, this is the job that I have to do. Was there anything particular that made you think that? Was there something that drew you, because you eventually got into sports? What was it, or was it just, I'm not enjoying this job?
No, I actually enjoyed the job quite a bit. I think, kind of going back to my upbringing, you know, when you're growing up in a situation where your environment is changing every 2 years, I think you kind of get used to that being your life. And I feel like that's kind of been my career in a lot of respects, is I'll have a job, I'll work it for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and then I get antsy and I'm looking for something else, whether it's, you know, the same kind of job in a different industry or a different job within that industry. But I just find that it's hard for me to be in the same place for too long. And so I think, you know, for me, I think maybe that was some of it, was it's like, okay, I've been here, I've done this, I've written how many dozens of magazine articles that have been published and seen by tens of thousands of people, you know, what else is out there? And so, you know, so I had a few other jobs. Actually, it was another writing job that brought me down to Rochester originally, about 20 years ago now, working real close to this office here. I was working for Exhibitor Magazine Group. So a little bit different, you know, more a business to business type publication, a little different focus, but very similar work. And so that brought me down here originally. And then it was from there that I got an opportunity to go to work for this professional volleyball team in a new volleyball league. And so that's kind of when I started making that leap toward the realm of sports from other areas that I had been focusing on.
I think people might even be surprised that are kind of going about their everyday life in Rochester or up in the cities that that there was a magazine devoted to the paranormal up there, or down in Rochester that there's a magazine that's actually the preeminent magazine for
trade show professionals. Yes.
Is actually on Broadway in a really neat office
right down here.
People are surprised to have a short stint in what would be considered as kind of an alternative career. You're just bouncing around onto all kinds of them. That's just fascinating. So where was the volleyball team based out of?
So the volleyball team was here in Rochester. It was called the Minnesota Chill. It was a small league that got started by a gentleman over in Chicago. So there was a team in Chicago. There was a team in St. Louis, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and here in Rochester. And so we played one full season. We had one full year, played one full season, and we were the champions. We were league champions, which is really fun in a lot of ways, because we were the smallest market, you know, and the founder was in Chicago, and the founder of the league's daughter actually played for the Chicago team. So, you know, there were some feelings that maybe there were some things stacked in other teams' favors. So for us to overcome so many odds and win the championship was really, you know, pretty amazing. And it's one of those things, you know, I mean, athletes at any level, when they win a championship, you know, they talk about, it's one of those things that it's hard to explain, because typically it doesn't happen. I mean, mm-hmm. You get your dynasties in sports here and there, but typically, you know, it's hard to win a championship at any high level.
And so this was women's professional volleyball. And what was your role with the Minnesota Chill?
I was the assistant general manager for them. So really kind of oversaw a lot of the game day operations, promotions, helped with marketing and advertising for the team. You know, we were in the smallest market, and yet we had the best attendance in the league. You know, and Rochester, I mean, people know Rochester is really has for a long time been a big volleyball town. I mean, we've got the National Volleyball Center here. We've brought in the past some pretty big college matches. We've brought in some national teams that have been here in the past that people might not remember that played here. So it's a big sport here in town. And so we were able to have a lot of success locally. You know, unfortunately, from a more league-wide standpoint, there were some misunderstandings between the league and one of its main sponsors, and so unfortunately that ultimately led to the end of that league. But
sure.
But you know, we felt pretty good about what we had done here in a very short time, and I think that also kind of helped me as I was starting Med City FC. You know, having seen kind of what it takes and how to do it, it wasn't the first time I'd been involved with a startup sports team. And so I think that helped me in a lot of respects. I think also having been involved in the sports community here, you know, I spent 4 years working for Rochester Youth Soccer Association, which is now called Minnesota Rush, but I was the director for them for 4 years.
So let's get some timelines on things here. So when was it that you worked for the Minnesota Chill?
That was 2002. Yeah, 2000. Started late 2001, kind of to the end of 2002, early 2003.
Okay. So then, you know, with the twists and turns, I'm just excited to know what the next steps were, and kind of chronologically, just and amount of time-wise before we get to Med City FC.
Yeah, so after the volleyball team folded, I had a sales job here, and then I got an opportunity actually to take over marketing, public relations, promotions, and advertising for the Idaho Museum of Natural History. So moved to Pocatello, Idaho for 3 years and oversaw all of those aspects of the Museum of Natural History that's on the campus of Idaho State University out there. So yeah, again, another interesting twist that I really loved. I mean, it was a fun experience. I got a chance to work with people that had passion for dinosaurs and prehistoric mammals and geology and again, all kinds of things that I never really was too deeply involved with, but I got a chance to learn about things that I never really thought I would. And so it was an awesome experience.
These are like kids' dream jobs. I'm going to work for a magazine that's, you know, we're looking to see whether Bigfoot's real.
So exactly.
That's right? Your day job? Yes. Yeah. Well, now I'm going to work for a professional women's volleyball team. Well, obviously. And I'm saying this sarcastically. Like my kids right now, 2 and 4, they just think dinosaurs and any prehistoric mammal is just the neatest thing.
Right, right.
And you got to work with that every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you realize kind of that, you know, that this experience has been a ride unlike most people have in their careers?
I suppose it is. I don't ever take a lot of time to think about all the things I've done in their entirety. You know, I mean, my focus always tends to be in the here and now. And so I don't often take that time to look back and except for a situation like this where when I'm talking about it, it's, you know, and it was part of my life. It's all been part of my life. And so I guess when you're living it, it doesn't always necessarily seem as exciting as some of it really has been, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you tend to maybe take that kind of stuff for granted. But
so go out to Idaho. So what crazy turn did it take after that? Because you obviously got back here eventually.
Yeah. So my wife, Jen, grew up over in Winona. Her parents still live over in St. Charles. We had at the time our daughter, when we moved away from here, our daughter was less than a year old. So she was getting to be preschool age. And my wife was homesick. You know, she had never been more than 2.5 hours from home. You know, she grew up in Winona, went to school up in the St. Paul. We lived here in Rochester, so always within a very tight radius of her parents, of her family. So she, you know, she just felt like she wanted to get back this way. And so we started looking to come back to the Midwest. And lo and behold, we had some friends here that were involved with Rochester Youth Soccer Association. And they said, hey, they're looking for a director. And so I came, you know, we were coming back that Christmas. It's probably Christmas of 2007 or 2006, and set up a chance to talk with the board. And a couple months later, through all the process, they offered me a job, and we came back. I started, I think, April 1st, and a couple weeks later was the first meeting for the recreation program that I had to lead. So had to get up to speed on it pretty quickly, but yeah, I ended up working for RYSA for about 4 years. And then after that, I actually spent 3 years working for Special Olympics Minnesota. So still in sports, a very different focus in some respects, but again, another great opportunity to see a different side of sports, to see some different perspectives, I guess, on the value of sport. And so I did that for about 3 years, oversaw all the events and the teams throughout all of southern Minnesota, from basically the Wisconsin border all the way to the South Dakota border. And so ran a couple dozen events a year with them and oversaw about, it must have been close to 50 different teams throughout all of southern Minnesota. And so I did that for a while. And then after that, I went to work. Worked over at Town Square Media here for about 3 years. So they have a bunch of the radio stations in town: KROC, Y105, Quick Country 96.5, nine stations that they run and oversee. And so, kind of getting back into my editorial side a little bit, I ended up getting a job there as their digital managing editor. So I oversaw all of their web content, the Facebook pages, social media, got a chance to work with all of the great radio personalities that were there at the time, and really enjoyed that job a lot.
Were you on air at all?
I did a little bit, did some minor stuff, not a ton of things, but they have an AM sports station, 1520 over there, so one of the radio personalities and I did a short sports program there for a while. Had a bunch of different people, you know, Marcus Sherrills was in, we had the Minnesota Freeze come in, we had, you know, a number of different guests come in and speak, and then we just did some stuff where we talked about whatever was happening in Minnesota sports.
I'm just kind of at a lot. There's so many, again, so many different directions. We're somewhat limited in time by some practicalities, but so again, now you're on a radio, you know, you're working in radio, which people would think would be so neat, speaking with professional athletes. That's just fascinating. And it's obvious that you've been interviewed before. I don't even have to ask questions. You're doing a really good job. Just to get back on the timeline, around what time were you done working at the radio station?
So when Med City FC got started, I was still working for the radio station.
Okay. And so when did, I guess maybe we'll transition now then into Med City FC.
Yeah. So I had a couple of friends of mine, actually it was one friend of mine here in town that asked, it was back a little before Thanksgiving 2016. And, you know, he said, "Hey, I've got an idea I want to run by. I was hoping maybe we could have lunch." So I said, "Sure, I'd love to hear your idea." So I show up for lunch, and it's my friend from here in town, and then it's another friend of mine who lives over in La Crosse, who I actually played soccer with in college up at Concordia. And I didn't expect him to be at this meeting, and I knew that those two kind of loosely knew each other, but I didn't know how well they knew each other. So we meet for lunch, and they throw out this idea. They're talking about, "Hey, we've got this soccer league. We'd like to start a team here in Rochester. We think you're the guy to do it, to get it started." They're telling me all about it. You know, they're like, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, let me give it some thought." So this is the week before Thanksgiving. I really loved the idea of a team here.
And what year was this?
This was 2016.
Okay.
I loved the idea of a team here. The league they were talking about was kind of forming their own independent league, so it only would have had like five teams. And so I was trying to think, well, how do you make that sustainable if you're only going to have, let's say, four home games in a season? How does that work if you're trying to build something that's going to be at a high level? You know, I wanted to do it right. I wanted to have high-level athletes involved. How do you do that if they're only going to get eight games in a season? So I kind of hemmed and hawed, and a couple weeks later they got back to me and they said, "Well, what are you thinking? We've got some really exciting news. The National Premier Soccer League has approached us about becoming part of their league." The National Premier Soccer League is basically the fourth division of soccer in the U.S. So the top amateur level, nationally recognized amateur level, semi-pro soccer.
And maybe we'll explain that a little bit because I expect a lot of people don't know soccer. So number one in North America is MLS.
Yes.
So that's the top MLS. Tier.
Major League Soccer is the top tier. And then there's USL,
which is
another professional. That's the United Soccer League. That's another professional league. And they're kind of doing some shifting around as well. But that's the another tier of professional soccer, kind of a second level.
And there was a Minnesota team.
Minnesota United now, who was in MLS, was actually in the second division before joining MLS.
Okay.
So there's a second division pro, and then there's a league called the PDL, and that's a Premier Development League, again another level. And so then we're right in there with them, and so basically we're a minor league team. For people in Rochester, or even for people in the Twin Cities, we're kind of the equivalent of the Rochester Honkers,
sure,
baseball team. A little bit like the Saints, although the St. Paul Saints, I think, get paid. Our players don't.
Your pool of players, then, obviously it's good to get Rochester players, but are these Division I college level?
We have a lot of different levels, yes. Okay. It's really been important to us to have some Rochester and Southeast Minnesota area players involved. So, every year, including this year, we've had anywhere from 6 to 9 or 10 of our players on the team from this area. But the rest of our team has been made up of players from colleges all over the country that are from all over the world. So the first 2 years, we had players representing 11 different countries on the team, and not the same 11 countries each year. So, everywhere from England, Sweden, Germany, France, Spain, to Chile, Mexico, Costa Rica, Canada, Ivory Coast, South Africa, Sweden, a wide range of players from all over. This year we're going to have players from Ghana and Ecuador and Colombia and Argentina, along with players from France and England and players from right here in our own town. We've got a handful of our players will be returning for their third season. We have a player on the team named Tiernan Talbot, who graduated from Lourdes High School here in Rochester. Another player, Alan Shembry-Wismeyer, who also was a Lourdes graduate. We have a player that played at John Marshall, Ayo Adebayo, who's just finished up or is just finishing up his senior year at Wartburg, so a Division III school. We have our starting goalkeeper last year, Nate Levy, was out of Byron, graduated from Byron High School. So we've got, we feel some of the among the best players in the Rochester area on the team, and I really think that's cool and important, because you can have a team that's all local guys, but then you're missing some of that international connection and those opportunities to make friends from all over the world and to see some of the relationships that some of these guys have built that they didn't know each other before they met here, and to see the way they've kind of gone off and some of the things that some of them have done since they've been here is really, maybe one of the most rewarding things above and beyond having, some great success on the field. I think just being able to see some of those relationships get built.
Sure. The fact that it's from all these different countries, I can understand that they're coming and playing college here. I expect, like the Honkers, it's the ability to retain your amateur status and play at a very high level. But how do you recruit these players from all over the world and locally even? What are you doing in terms of scouting? And then how do you sell coming to play in Rochester to players from around the world?
So we have tryouts. We've had tryouts every year. Had anywhere from 50 to 80 players per year at tryouts. So we typically take, anywhere from 3 or 4 to 9 or 10 players from tryouts. We have a lot of players that will send us highlight videos. So we look at video and make some decisions from those highlight videos. That's where we get a lot of our players from. Last year we had probably a dozen players come back from the first year. So some of them had friends and teammates that they recommended. So for year two, we probably brought in, I would say, a good five or six new players that were actually friends and or teammates of some of our returning guys. So went kind of on some of their recommendations. This year we actually have 15 guys coming back from last year's team. So that's, yeah, we're really excited about that. And in fact, five of those guys are coming back for their third season. So, you know, for an amateur team playing at a level like this with college guys, a lot of whom have opportunities to go play in a lot of different places, to have them want to come back here says a lot about not just our team, but I think about the community in general. And, you know, and I say that because, you know, we have to find places for these players to live. So we rely on host families in the community. And another one of those amazing things is the relationships that have been built between these host families and these players. You know, a lot of the host families are taking the same players again, you know, and some of them have even said, you know, we're not sure we're going to host, but if our guys from last year are coming back or our guy from last year is coming back, we will definitely take him back. So I think that says a lot about our community, about the bonds that we're creating between these host families and these players. And I think it also says a lot about the players that we're bringing in, you know, that we've been pretty fortunate these first couple years that we've had players that understand what we're about. They understand, you know, what the expectations are of them. And, you know, with maybe one or two exceptions, they've all really lived up to that and beyond. And so I think that's really helped us too as a team, you know, because we've done a lot of community service work. You know, we've done work with, you know, Boys and Girls Club. We've been in the elementary schools working with elementary kids. We've been, you know, done stuff at Channel One Food Bank. We've kind of Habitat for Humanity. Anywhere we can get ourselves engaged with the community, we're trying to do that because we want them, you know, we want them to understand that, you know, even though 70% of our guys aren't from Rochester, they're embracing the community and they want to be part of the Rochester community. And like I say, some of these guys are coming back for their second and even third years with the team. And I think I think it's all the things that we've been able to put in place, you know, good places for them to live, great coaching staff. You know, our head coach, Neil Cassidy, is a USSFA licensed coach, the highest license you can have in the country. And honestly, there's a lot of teams at this level that don't have that level of coach. So we have great coaching. You know, we work with Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine. We do the performance training through them. We get great athletic training services through them, second to none, you know, among the best in the world. We have the players, you know, we have a partnership with Rochester Athletic Club. So all summer they get, you know, arguably the best workout facility in all of Southeastern, all of Southern Minnesota to work out at and relax in, you know, with the great swimming pools and all the other great amenities that they've got there. So, you know, so back to your question a little bit about, you know, how do we get players to come here? Why do players want to come here? I think it's that combination of things.
Sure.
Because I've heard from a lot of players, you know, a lot of our players that have played elsewhere before, you know, we do things so much better than a lot of the teams that are out there. And I think it's those things that draw these players here in the first place. And then it's those the positive experiences they have when they're here that makes so many of them want to come back.
And for people coming to watch, are these the stars of tomorrow? Is this a stepping stone towards one of those professional leagues?
Yes. Yep, it is. And we, you know, back to your question a little bit earlier, as far as like the makeup of the players. Yeah, we have players, NCAA Division 1, 2, 3, NAIA players. We've got guys that have played, you know, youth soccer in some pretty big name academies. We've got a couple of players coming in this year, NCAA Division 1 players from England. The one was in the youth system at Burnley FC, who plays in the English Premier League. Another one was in the youth system with Southampton FC, another English Premier League team. We've got I don't want to give too much away because it's not quite finished yet, but we are very close to finalizing signing a player that has 9 appearances for their national team. So it's high caliber soccer. You know, I think I think when people come out and watch, they're really impressed with the level of play that we that we're bringing right here to Rochester, you know, and that's one of the really great things I think about what we're doing and about this team is we give a chance for our kids in the community to come out and see these guys play and get to know these guys and really get to look up to these players. And that's what I think is so fun. You know, we talked a little bit about Minnesota United before, and there's a lot of people in town, a lot of soccer people in town that go up to those games, and that's great, you know, but the reality is a family of four going up to watch a Minnesota United game, by the time you pay for your tickets and your gas and some food, I mean, you're easily talking $200+ to go see a game. You can come watch our team at RCTC. A family of four, if you've got two kids that play soccer, they, you know, for one of the youth clubs in town, they get in for free through a program that we have. So you're basically paying $20 to watch really high level soccer right here in your own backyard. And that's what I really like about it, is it makes high level soccer accessible to everybody in our community.
These have been excellent answers to my questions. Thank you so much for joining me. I have a few questions to wrap up. There's a couple that I ask all of my guests.
Sure.
One, you've kind of been talking about, you know, what you've been doing with MedCity FC in exposing it to the youth soccer here so that they have a level that they can look up to see what's attainable. Especially it's nice when you have the local contingent that they can think, hey, I can get to that and possibly further. But if you had a magic wand, so this is my magic wand question every time. If you had a magic wand that you could do anything, it doesn't even have to be related to the soccer team. This is your magic wand. You can do anything. But if you had a magic wand that could just change one thing, that you could do one thing with it, what would it be?
In relation to the team or in relation to our community?
So however you want to do it. It's been really interesting to see some people, and I'll just talk a little bit while you think about it.
Okay.
Some people have talked about bringing awareness of something they're working with to people. For some others, it was for one individual, it was to go back in time and to tell his younger self to do something. It really is yours to do with whatever you would like. If you had a magic wand that could change something in the world, what would it be?
Ooh, that is a very deep question,
Tyler. But I think we can, you know, maybe just to narrow it down, we'll talk about specifically for the soccer team. Because obviously, world hunger, poverty, sure. All that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right. Those well, right, where do you right? Where do you start, right?
But, I think, you but know, related to the things that we've talked about or your future plans with MedCity FC or for the community going forward?
I think if I had that magic wand and I could wave it and do something in connection with MedCity FC, I think it would be to be able to expand our capacity. And what I mean by that is I would love to, you know, ideally I'd love for us at some point to have our own place to play. You know, I would love to have our own stadium where we were able to control all aspects of it. And, you know, and maybe someday that will happen. I would love to be able to get the club to a point where we had a reserve team. You know, there's some teams in our conference, some teams in the National Premier Soccer League that have a reserve team. I would love to get to that point because that would open up even more opportunities for local and area players to get a chance to play at that higher level. So I'd love to see that happen. You know, I'd love to see something happen with the women's game at some point. I think that's growing. You know, it's been strong for a long time in the U.S., but I see women's soccer growing globally, and I would love to see that happen. You know, and I think all of those things ultimately will provide even more opportunities for our current youth players to get that chance. You know, it's hard when right now we only have 23 players, you know, 25 players. But if suddenly we were able to have a second team, So instead of having, you know, 25 players associated with our team, we could have 35 or 40. And suddenly there's 10 or 15 more spots open that those players that maybe aren't on the first team right away, maybe they work their way up, whether it's during the course of the first season or over the course of a couple of seasons of hard work and dedication, that they could get themselves up there. You know, same thing with the women's side. You know, there's a lot of great female players in town. Be great to give a similar opportunity to them. And so, and who knows? I mean, that all of that could,
hopefully
happen down the road, right? But but right now, I think we're really focused on the 2019 season. You know, our first game is May 11th already. So, you know, I mean, it's less than 40 days away. We got
from when we record this.
Yes, exactly. Right. So, you know, I think that's in order for us to make those magic wand things happen, we need to have a really strong 2019 season. It's really important that we get really good community support. You know, we get people out to the games. Hopefully Mother Nature will cooperate and we'll have some beautiful nights. But you know, I think all of those big dreams and all of that magic wand stuff, it starts May 11th and it starts with getting a lot of people out to watch a lot of great players play soccer and, sure. and keep us continuing to grow from where we started, you know, less than 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago to where we are now and where I'd love to see us go.
Yeah. And those are realistic things. Another question I ask of my guests, you're obviously getting out and around Rochester, southern Minnesota, but you've had quite the experience in Minnesota. Who are three people that you would recommend that I have a conversation with to learn their Minnesota story?
Three people. I would say probably Jamie Sunsbach. He runs Collider. He's got a very interesting story. I would say
I'm talking with him next week.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Yes. He's a good guy. He's very passionate about especially the entrepreneurial piece of Rochester, of our community.
Yep.
And it's funny because, you know, he was the one who like first said, you know, you're really an entrepreneur. And I didn't think of what I was doing in that way. Right. I mean, I wanted to start a soccer team. So you just do it. Right. But I didn't think of myself as an entrepreneur. I didn't think of it as a quote business, even though, you know, it's run as a business and like a business, but yeah, I mean, he was kind of the one that helped help facilitate also some connections and things. He's a great, great connection.
Rochester is very much a connected city.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So we got Jamie. That one, I'm going to do that one for you. No problem.
Yeah. I would say, if you want to get interesting perspective from somebody that is not from the country, our head coach, Neil Cassidy, who's also with Minnesota Rush. He's responsible for all the coaching, all the direction of coaching for basically all the soccer in Rochester at this point. Coaches the women's team over at St. Mary's University over in Winona. He'd be a fun person to talk to.
Okay.
And a third person would be, let me think of a third person here.
I'm thinking from your old days, like some Sasquatch or paranormal guy based out of Minnesota or something.
Oh, it's I'm trying to think if any of them were based out of Minnesota.
It's okay. It's up to you.
Yeah.
It's your list.
I don't know if I'd even know how to contact her, but the woman's name is Phyllis Galdi, and she was the person who was still running that magazine even still as of like 5 years ago. So it'd be interesting. I haven't really connected with that part of my former life in a while, but it would be interesting to see. I think it'd be interesting to see if that magazine's even still going, because when I was there, and this was, you know, what, almost 25 years ago, we actually celebrated its 50th anniversary. So for any magazine of any kind to be around for 50 years is a pretty big deal.
Sure.
So, and I think for a publication like that is such a niche topic, I think the fact that it had been around for 50 years, that could be a really, a really good story. You know, even just a more broader Minnesota, you know, maybe not so much a Rochester story, but, and then I'm going to throw a fourth one out there. And Wiz Bachman, she was one of the volleyball players that played for the Minnesota Chill. She had graduated from Lakeville High School, Lakeville North, I think, had played collegiately at UCLA. Her husband is, or was, I'm not sure if he still is, but was it the head women's volleyball coach or head men's volleyball coach for the U.S. coached the Olympics in China, the Beijing Olympics. And her mother and father were actually two of the people, I don't know if you remember the story, but there were two people that were attacked in China during the Olympics, and her mother and father were those people. And
all based out of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Or were at the time.
Yeah. So I could try to get you in touch with her. I'm still friends with her. She doesn't live here.
Sure.
But she could be, I think she's got a really great story. She played in one of the Olympics. She's
just based on all your background, I have a feeling that I'm going to call on you for a whole lot more people too. Thank you very much. So thanks very much for joining me. I'm definitely going to try to get out to a Med City FC game, at least one with my younger kids. I think it'll be a great experience. Thanks for joining and sharing your Minnesota story.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Tyler. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Minnesota Stories. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if there's anybody you'd like to hear from, let us know. We would love to hear their Minnesota story as well.